Blog Talk Radio. welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone to Leslie Ferdinand. She is the author of Wicked Allure. The book is multicultural romance with adults-only content, explicit language, and drug use. The underlying question is, what does a man say to a woman he betrayed but never stopped loving? We'll be talking with Leslie on topics such as multiculturalism in our society, dysfunction in families, and pushing the bar a little higher for ourselves to excel. But before we chat with Leslie, I'd like you to know a little bit about her. Leslie C. Ferdinand and her mother, Shirley H. Ferdinand, have been writing together since 1991. They were both born in New Orleans and lived there until 2005 when they lost everything in Hurricane Katrina, including Leslie's dog. Leslie is divorced and has three daughters. She is Shirley's only child. They've appeared in the New Orleans Magazine, the Times-Picayune, RT Book Reviews, the Fort Blend Herald, Fort Bend Lifestyles, and the Natchez Sun. They also were included in Catherine Falk's 1998 How to Write a Romance for the New Markets and Get It Published, and Mae Goldrick's Marriage of Minds Collaborative Fiction Writing in 2000. They've made appearances in television stations in New Orleans, Lake Charles, Lafayette, Beaumont, and Toronto. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Irene.
Well, this is going to be a fun conversation because I know we have a lot to talk about. But before we get started, would you just give sort of a brief outline of what your book, Wicked Allure, is about?
Wicked Allure is about two people who are trying to find each other again. They were in a relationship previously, and the hero, Zachary Steele, messed up a little bit, and he has regretted that for 3 years, and he seems to not be able to move on. Madigan, on the other hand, is in a similar rut, but she wants to move on, and they're thrown back together due to the schemes of her mother. And all hell breaks loose after that.
Oh, yeah? Now, I understand also this is classified as an erotic romance.
Yes. Yes, it is, simply because of the descriptions in the love scenes, and we do not use many euphemisms for the female anatomy, but we just, for instance, someone asked us if we had a book on male on euphemisms for the male anatomy, and I'm like, no, we don't. We have sex manuals, but maybe it comes from there.
Now, when you talk about we, what do you mean by we?
My mother and I write together, believe it or not. We write erotic romances together.
You and your mother write erotic romances? I mean, that is just so foreign to me. I can't even imagine writing an erotic romance with my mother, let alone a romance.
Neither can I, and we do it together, believe me. That's why she's not on the phone today. I'm keeping her as far away from the mic as possible.
You are just too funny. Let's talk about that. I mean, how does that work? Now, you know, I can't imagine with my own mother. I just can't. But I can entertain the thought of writing something like that with my daughter.
See, mother-daughter writing team.
It's a little bit different, but I'm just wondering how it works for you. I mean, there are some discussions that have to be done about some of this erotic stuff.
Not really. What she does is she'll put in her parts and she's like, here's a love scene, write it in for me. And so that's the way we do it. But I do use research books. Let me clarify that. I'm single, so I have to go to the sex manuals a little bit. And we were on live TV one time, and she was like, someone asked the same question, how do you come up with the love scenes? And she said, oh, Leslie researches. Research? Love scenes? Really? And then she said, oh, no, books. I mean books, research books. Well, I had about 23 men at the book signing the next day, which worked out well, but still.
Oh, that is too funny. Now, I also understand that this book is multicultural.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And so tell me why you decided to do multicultural.
Well, I'm from New Orleans, and New Orleans is a melting pot. I live in Houston. Houston is rather a melting pot. Well, I live in the Houston metro area.
Uh-huh.
And my family, I guess you know about the Creoles of New Orleans and the white Creoles and the black Creoles. And with
right.
black Creoles, you have the African-American and French and Spanish and Caucasian. And we're like the Rainbow Coalition. And so it's always been a part of my life. My ex-husband is from Northern Ireland. Our daughter is biracial. When the characters came along and I started writing about them, and I realized the heroine was African American, but she also, I took a little bit of what my family roots are and put in her. Likewise with Zach, his mother is from New Orleans. You know, I haven't been back to New Orleans in several years, but I still love the place. And so I went on with what I sort of took that from, say, for instance, my daughter. Her father is white and her mother is black, so I made the hero with a similar background.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mother's family, I had a great aunt who was very, very fair. You know, she almost looked Caucasian. And I had a great uncle who was very, very dark. So, I mean, and they were my grandmother's sister and brother.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I just grew up with that.
Well, it's interesting you should say, because we know a fellow here, and he's African American. He is a twin.
Mm-hmm.
His sister is bright blonde, fair skinned, almost, you know, translucent, and blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the only white one in the family of, I believe that there are like three or four other siblings, but this is a twin situation. So, you know, there we go, and you're talking about, you know, your family, some of them being very fair.
Right, right. And so it's, you know, race is such a sensitive issue and
mm-hmm.
such a hot-button issue, and but I didn't look at it from the racial perspective. I put multicultural on the title within the disclaimer, I think because, one, we wrote as Christine Holden before, my mom and I, and we
mm-hmm.
wrote historical romance and we wrote time travel romance. And I wanted to distinguish that, for one, for anyone who may recognize us from 11 years ago, sure
yeah.
that they knew that this was a different type of book that we were writing. And I was so used to describing it in that way that I didn't even think about it when I wrote multicultural romance with explicit sex and explicit language and some drug use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it just came up that way, and I'm wondering, will that turn readers off, or will that draw some people in? I want people to read the story. It's a universal story, you know, because these people are trying to get back together. They're trying to find what can make their relationship work and trying to repair not only their relationship but some other things in their lives that need working on. And we all want that. It doesn't matter what color you are, what race you are. We're all searching to better ourselves, and a lot of us are looking for people to love.
You know, that is such a good point, and it really doesn't matter what color you are, what race, what culture, you know, wherever you live. I think that that is the bottom line in the whole world, really.
Yes, and to me, if we had more love, we wouldn't have so much war.
Amen. I just want to touch a little bit more about the race aspect. Now, you're African American, and you married a white, your ex-husband was from Northern Ireland. How did society or accept you as the two, you know, multicultural, multiracial?
That's interesting. I think it would have been more acceptable today. I was just watching something on the news where I think it's about 83% of Americans, 83 or 84% of Americans today accept interracial relationships, whereas in 1987, only 48% of
uh-huh.
Americans accepted such a relationship. And we were together between 1994 to 1999. And it was, we were in New Orleans, and believe it or not, it was pretty rough going. We got it both races, black and white. And
even in New Orleans?
Even in New Orleans, yes. And
I'm surprised.
I was too.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was not a good experience, and I'm not going to say that contributed completely to mm-hmm. the disintegration of our marriage. We had other problems, but I think that helped a lot. You know, there was not a lot of places that we could go where we'll really accept it.
I'm sorry to hear that. That just, I have a hard time even going there or imagining it. It's just not in my realm at all. And what about your daughter? You know, she's obviously biracial.
Yes, I have three daughters. My mm-hmm. oldest daughter is from my marriage, and the other two are from a relationship I was in later. But mm-hmm. Zoe is biracial, and she has very fair skin. Right now her hair is red, mm-hmm. thanks to a bottle of Clairol or whatever she uses. But and yeah. it's been yellow before, so I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But she does not. It doesn't bother her too much, and I have brought her up to let her know that she is biracial. She should be proud of both of her heritages, and she should not let anyone disparage her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, I hope she takes those lessons and learns them well.
How old is she?
She'll be 16 in August.
Okay, that's kind of a, you never know what happens age.
Right.
You know, today she may accept it, tomorrow she may not, the next day she may. It's just kind of an age where I think, you know, they're going on 8 and going on 21.
Yes. Yes, and sometimes she does think she's my mother. she'll question me, well, why are you doing this and why are you doing that? And you really need to lose weight and you need to do this and don't eat that. I'm
oh,
like, okay,
yeah.
Zoe. All right. Thanks.
She's trying to find her place in life, really, is what it is. So you had talked about repairing relationships, and you know, the divorce rate is extremely high in the United States, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. You know, is it just really easy to get a divorce? Is it people that don't really try to, you know, get counseling and really work on their relationship, on their marriage? Or, you know, what is really going on? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a combination of things. I think one thing is that it is very, very easy to obtain a divorce. I don't know if you can still go and get a 3-day divorce anymore. I think they banned it that a while back. I'm not sure. But that, and this is such a fast-paced society now. You know, we can't concentrate or we can't focus on one thing because in the course of the day we're answering emails, sending text messages, okay. looking at the computer screen. So it's very easy to connect with other people, which makes it less likely for you to sit down and talk to someone. And if without communication, you can't make a marriage or a relationship work. So I think it's just easier for people to walk away and try someone else.
And as we know, studies have proven that you get into the same relationship that you were in before unless you change that imprint that you have. But
right.
Because there's always, you're looking for somebody that will fill a void
right.
that you didn't have. So, you know, it's interesting how that all works.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Leslie Ferdinand, author of an erotic romance titled Wicked Allure. As you've heard so far, we are delving into some really interesting stuff. Keep listening because there's more. There's some competitiveness that goes on in your book. And it goes with a particular with the Madigan's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Carolyn, which is Madigan's mother, ended up having to be in the spotlight at the urging of her husband. And their daughters, including Madigan, was pushed into the spotlight with them. And in a way, she enjoyed the attention. She liked society's spotlight, and she liked all that was focused on her. But as her daughters became older, especially Madigan, that attention was pulled away from her, and she did not appreciate that too much. She felt she was being pushed into the background. I didn't touch up on it too much in the book, but mainly I think because of society's view on youth and things like that. And that may come in a later book. I'm not sure yet. But
Do you find that writing with your mother, that there's some competitiveness going on between the two of you?
When we first started out, we would have screaming matches. I mean, we would stop speaking to each other for 2 days or so because she wanted something in the book that I didn't want in, and I wanted something in the book that she didn't want in. But now, not really, because she'll go in her room with her yellow notepads. She still writes longhand.
Oh, okay.
And I have so many other things to do, you know. I'm one of those people that's easily distracted until I leave her alone and she writes her parts. And sometimes I'll come up with the first chapter or two, and then she starts writing from there. And as I begin to type, I will put in my characters or my thoughts, the love scenes, things like that. So we blend it together in that way, and we do not compete with each other anymore.
I heard that. What about in other things in life? Is there competition between you and your mother?
Not really. I mean, not now. Now that I've gotten older and wiser, I've learned to listen, and what I don't want to hear, I just sort of tune her out. Don't tell her I said that. So that saves a lot of arguments.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes we have to do that, and it's really okay. And, you know, dysfunction comes in all kinds of forms and ways in walks of our society, and I'd like to just kind of talk about that because every family has dysfunction, and, of course, you address some of that in your book. So let's just kind of go into that direction.
Okay. Regarding the book or... Okay.
Yeah, we can start with the book and then talk about society.
Well, yeah, every family does have a level of dysfunction. Some levels are higher than others. And I think in Madigan's family with her mother and Carolyn's views on things, their dysfunction went to a completely another level. And so that came across, we tried to put that in the book because it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, you're still going to face life's problems, and if you don't have a stable foundation, your family is still going to be dysfunctional.
Exactly, and, you know, how, I think a lot of times, though, people that are in dysfunctional families don't even realize that they're dysfunctional. I'm just kind of reflecting back on my childhood and, you know, the dysfunction that we had there. It was just a very normal way of life for me. And I didn't realize that dysfunction until I left home and got into society and started doing research. And it's like, whoa.
Right.
This was not. It was normal for me and maybe normal from where I lived in my culture, but it was not healthy.
Right. And I think once we get older, as we get older, you know, we recognize the dysfunctions that we had in our family as we grew up. You know, I think my family, for instance, because of the fact that I am single, and sometimes my daughters will ask, even though my ex-husband is in contact with Zoe often, why aren't we a whole family? So there's a little bit of dysfunction there. And then we have several generations living in the same household, me and my daughters and my mom. You know, and my mom has her age issues. You know, she won't tell you, I won't tell you her age. She doesn't want me.
Oh.
But she sometimes insists that she once dated Julius Caesar. You know, and their values were completely different in ancient Roman times.
Right.
So she tells me, we have a different, we grew up in different times. You know,
yes.
She was born in, well, pre-40s. I'll say that.
Okay. Works for me. I hear you. I'm putting her in the same place as my mother.
And I was born in 1971. And then my first daughter was born in 1996. So she, you know, we were all born in different eras, of course, and we
yeah.
are at different places with a different set of ideas about how things should be done, which is in every family, of course, every generation, mother, daughter, grandmother. But when you live together, it's completely different.
I can't imagine. I can't. And I'm wondering, you know, you're talking about three different generations living under the same roof. Now, do you find that you parent differently of your daughters than your mother parented you?
Yes, I'm more lenient with my daughters, which does not always work out, but I am. My mom, you know, my mom was the old school. I probably got 4 spankings, and when I say spankings, I don't mean beatings, but spankings in my life. But I knew when she said to do something, she meant to do it. You know, and she is also that type of grandmother, but she's also the things that I could do, she will, I mean, I couldn't do, she will let my kids do. They're her babies.
Yeah.
So, we have different styles of parenting, and she points that out all the time. And I'm like,
oh, does she?
Yes. Yes, so, you know, those are the tune-out times. So
how do your daughters accept her direction, you know, as the grandmother living under the same roof? Now, sometimes you and your mother have different concepts, as you say, different parenting styles. What happens to your daughters when there's a conflict between you and your mother?
Regarding them or just the conflict in general?
Both, actually, regarding them, for one, because it would affect them directly.
Regarding them, they will run to me and say, Mama, Mima said such and such, and we told her we don't have to do that because you don't make us. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's we'll leave it at that.
Okay, and in general, when there's conflict between you and your mother, how do your daughters react?
We have not had really a lot of conflict in the last couple of years, you know. They would. It depends on the level of conflict. If we were really having a bad day and ended up in a screaming match or something, they would just sort of sit there and look at us like, "Okay, you two have lost your minds. Let's just be quiet here."
Okay. Yeah. So, also in your book, you mentioned that Zach had lost his company, and you know, and then he went through a lot of transitions and then pushing the bar higher. And so let's just talk about that. Could you explain what happened to Zach?
Zach is a person who's always looking for more. I mean, more pleasure, more money, more whatever it is in life or he's currently involved in. He wants as much as possible. And he wanted to have his company publicly traded to make more money, and it didn't work out well for him. And he regretted that. He wanted one of the things that concerned him about his relationship with Madigan the first time around was he always wanted more from women and more women, and he did not want to hurt her. So that was sort of the foundation of his character. He was always searching for more, and he didn't want to have that in the end hurt Madigan, which in a way it did, because he wanted more. He wanted things his way. And when he decided to push away from her, he was going to do that regardless of how she felt. And, well, it didn't work out. he sort of got his own self hurt.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's, you know, isn't that the life of many?
Yes.
I mean, I hear this over and over and over again. And, you know, it just seems that our society is so wanting to succeed and get higher and higher and be better than somebody else. And, you know, I'm just not sure if this is going in the right direction or not.
No, we never, ever take a deep breath and
say,
thank goodness for what we have, or I'm so happy for that other person. We as a society generally don't do that. You know, when we wrote as Christine Holden, I was asked a couple of times to come and speak at engagements, which I'm shy in front of a lot of people, so my public speaking usually lasts 10 or 15 minutes tops, and I really go through it really quickly. But I would always like to give advice on how to get a book written or try to point out what to do, because there's no magic formula to getting an agent or getting an editor, but you know what to do to try to get in to that point. And a couple of people said that I shouldn't do that. You know, those were trade secrets, as if there are secrets.
There aren't.
And the competition is so high. There are so many slots available to unpublished writers in traditional publishing, and why would I try to help someone who may come and take my place? But to me, it's all in karma. You know, if it's not in the stars for me to be published, I could sit here and remain quiet for the next 50 years, and I won't be published.
Mm-hmm.
I won't be successful. On the other hand, if it's for me, if that's fated for me, I can tell everyone, stand on the corner with a bullhorn and announce it to the world, and it won't matter, because that's what's meant for me.
I so agree. And, you know, for what I believe also, if it's meant to be, it's easy. If it's difficult, it's not meant to be, and the person really needs to revisit that, because, you know, you can push and push and push, and if you're constantly pushing against a brick wall, obviously, there's a huge message there. But if you push that bar a little higher and there is no brick wall, you can take that next step and next step, because it's easy and it's meant to be.
Right, right. And you can go on. And sometimes I think people push the brick walls more and more, because you do read the success stories and how people pushed and pushed despite the odds and made it anyway. But you know, you have to be willing to face all the adversities and have plan B and plan C and all the way down to plan Z.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, Leslie, this has been a lot of fun talking to you, and we've just kind of covered all kinds of topics that actually are included in your book, and maybe a little extra.
Yes, it's been a pleasure. I'm so glad that I got a chance to talk to you as well.
Me too. And, gosh, listeners, we've been now talking with Leslie Ferdinand, and her book is Wicked Allure, and as if you've heard, she also co-writes with her mother, which I still have a big question mark on that, but that's okay. It's me. It's my stuff I have to get over. Do check it out. Our reviewer, Paige Lover, loved the book, and she really highly recommends it, and I do too. And, you know, it is erotic romance, and there are some love scenes, but there's also a really, really good story as a base, and so it's not really considered to be just a totally erotic book. There are some messages in it, and I know that when you check it out, you will actually enjoy it. Again, it's Wicked Allure, and the author is Leslie Ferdinand. Again, Leslie, thanks.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.